What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode here on Whiskey Throttle Media. I'm your host, Brent Bowser. Before we jump in the podcast, I want to give a shout out to Factory Connection for coming on board and sponsoring our podcast. They're a big supporter of Whiskey Throttle Media. Lots of our test bikes have Factory Connection suspension on them, and they just do really good work. They've been around a long time. They offer lots of different services for your suspension, full rebuilds, revalve, pretty much everything suspension related that you need, you can get done at Factory Connection. So if you haven't had a chance, go on to factoryconnection.com and see what products and services they have available. We're here today with Rock River rider Logan Best. What's going on, Logan? How are you, man?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, appreciate you jumping on and chatting with us today. For those out there who aren't familiar with who you are, just go ahead and give us a little bit of background on yourself, where you're from, how old you are, just things that people wouldn't know about you.
Alrighty, so yeah, like Brent said, my name's Logan Best. I'm from Northport, Florida. I'm 18 years old. I race 250B, 450B, Schoolboy 2. I'm originally from Massachusetts. Obviously, that's not very unheard of as a motocross racer going from the Northeast to the South, obviously due to weather and whatnot. But yeah.
So how long have you been in Florida, and when did you make that, you know, switch to moving from Massachusetts?
So I was probably 6 years old when we moved to North Carolina first.
Okay.
I started at this place called JWTF. Obviously, a lot of people know Jimmy Weiner. And then after that, we kind of kept moving further south. And now I have been down south for about a little over 12 years now.
Okay.
And I now train in Claremont, Florida at Sandbox.
Oh, cool. So you're training at Sandbox, and that's cool. There's a pretty good group of guys there. How are you? Do you like Florida and the weather compared to, you know, the Northeast that you were at before?
Oh, obviously, 100%. Obviously, you know, we get to ride year round. I think our coldest is probably like 40, which obviously is still pretty cold, but
right.
Those are obviously still riding conditions.
So did you just grow up riding and racing, and then like from a very young age?
No, I played soccer. My mom had a full scholarship through college playing soccer. My dad was a semi-pro goalie until he was 35.
That's cool.
My brother rode a little bit, not nearly at a national level, just kind of for fun. Mm-hmm. And then just one day I saw it on TV and decided to pick it up.
That's funny. So you came from like a pedigree of, you know, athletics, and then you decide, you're like, you know what, I'm going to ride dirt bikes.
Yeah, I definitely learned the hard way with motocross because, you know, everyone starts in a field half the time, which that's what I did. I started on a little Honda 50 in a field. And then the first track I went to, I didn't realize that there were jumps because I was only 4 years old. And I went off this tabletop and absolutely just sent it. And it was a disaster. Blew all sorts of parts off my Honda 50. Ended up crashing. It was awful. But I wanted to get back on it.
Yeah, it's crazy whenever I go out to the local tracks and see these kids on little bikes. You know, they're 5, 6, 7 years old. And some of these kids are jumping on the jumps. And I'm just like, dude, I don't know if their mental capacity could be there. I have a 14-year-old daughter. I'm like, I can't imagine her doing this. So it's pretty wild when you see the young kids out there just ripping, and you know, it's just wild. So it's cool to see. It's fun when you see a kid out there on a little bike just shredding like that. You're like, okay, we got to keep an eye on him.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, even like I saw the KTM commercial on TV this past weekend, and there was that kid jumping that new electric 50.
Oh, yeah.
On the, I was like, I couldn't even imagine doing that when I was his age.
No, and then last year at the SMX, I think it was the first round in Charlotte, some of those kids were hitting the triple on those 50s, or I don't know if it was 65, whatever it was, but I was just like, okay, it's getting wild out here. So, no, that's cool. So growing up, did you go to public school? Were you homeschooled? How did you grow up in, you know, the education?
Oh, so yeah, I was probably, I didn't public school until the second grade. And then from there on out, I did multiple different online schools, from this one called Calvert to the most famous dirt bike school to OnTrack. And then once we moved down to Florida, we moved to Florida Virtual, which that was probably the better choice for me, just because I can move at my own pace. And then I was fortunate enough to be able to graduate a year early.
Oh, right. Really?
So that was definitely a huge goal of mine. You don't want to spend too much time doing school, especially when you're training, because that's the hard thing. It's really hard to balance both school and racing.
Yeah, it's very rare nowadays that, you know, the guys that make it to the top level of the sport, they you know, didn't, or that they weren't homeschooled, right? Because there's going to school all day, there's not a whole lot of time. You know, you go right after school, but and you got homework and all that stuff. So I can only imagine how much easier it made it to actually, you know, focus on this from a young age. But also, it, in a sense, it almost makes you grow up quicker, because you're like, you get school out of the way, but then your main job is, you know, riding and training. So it's cool, but also makes you grow up, probably feel like you have to grow up a little earlier.
Yeah, totally. It definitely does get difficult, especially, you know, like I said, it was good for me that I graduated a year early, just because, you know, especially moving up to the bigger bikes, you need to be in the gym more, you need to be stronger for obviously a heavier bike. So you can kind of get away with it when you're on 65s, 85s, but, you know, once you move up to 125s, I mean, that's a pretty it's a pretty hard task, being in the gym, you know, spending 2-3 hours, you know, on the bike during training days, Monday to Friday. So you kind of lose that being a kid aspect. Like you were saying, you grow up definitely a lot quicker.
Yeah. I mean, I was never at your level, but I remember growing up, we went racing all the time, and, but it was just on the weekends, and, you know, cause we went to school and everything, and we were all just hanging out. And now it's like, and, you know, we weren't treating it like a job just because it was more of a fun. But I always wonder, for you guys, do you sometimes wish, you're like, man, I mean, you obviously like riding and racing, and, you know, you're getting to the top level, but do you ever have a time where you're just like, dude, I just want to be a normal kid for a little bit?
You know, that's hard. I think it gets a little bit easier once you become a little bit older. Obviously, with getting a license, that kind of opens up your freedom, I guess, in a little bit. Like, I picked up golfing a couple years ago, so that kind of transfers over to the quote-unquote normal side of life. Same thing with, you know, I have friends that live an hour away. I have my license. I can go hang out and be a kid, live that normal life.
Yeah, for sure. So what does a typical day and week look like for you? You know, you're, I think you just got back from Daytona RCS super amateur supercross. You know, you're, but what does a typical week and day look like for you as a, you know, a B rider?
So if I stay at my house, I will probably wake up at 6:30, eat some breakfast. It takes me about an hour to get to the track, with traffic and whatnot. So then I'll drive the track, go do our morning warm-up at Sandbox with all the guys. We warm up at 9 a.m. That way we can be on the bike by 10. And so we'll just do a little light spin, do some stretching, and then we'll do our riding between 10 and 1. And then after that, I most definitely have some gym stuff to do. So I'll hit the gym on the way back and be done by probably 4:30, and then hop on my PC after a quick shower.
Yeah, so you're gaming. We were talking a little bit about it before we hit record. What games are you playing? And, you know, what do you? I know you're doing it on a PC. What's your go to game?
I play a lot of Rainbow Six Siege. I also play, and there's a game called Hunt Showdown that I played with a couple of my buddies. That's kind of not a lot of people know about it, but it's a fun game. And then also the new game Helldivers that came out a couple months ago. That one has really taken off.
Yeah, never heard any of those. Most of the time when I talk to you guys, there's Fortnite or something called, used to be Call of Duty, but it's kind of going away, it seems like. But that's cool. I hadn't heard of those two games you just mentioned.
Yeah, no, they're pretty fun. I used to play a lot of Call of Duty. I used to play a lot of Fortnite. Fortnite kind of drained out a little bit.
Yeah.
But I also play it every once in a while just with some buddies.
Yeah, I feel like Fortnite and even Call of Duty, the more updates they've done, I don't know, maybe it's just you get older and you just want the original version. But Call of Duty, the original Call of Duties, you know, the first couple that came out were always the best. And then it seems like Fortnite was really cool in the beginning. Everybody played, then, like you said, it kind of fizzed out. So everybody's kind of searching for the next best thing.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, when you race and you don't get to sit in front of your computer for 6-7 hours a day and try and at least be good at the games, you get frustrated quite quickly. So you immediately you turn your PC on or whatever, and then you immediately want to shut it back off because you get so mad.
You're rage quitting?
Yes, 100%.
Oh, so you mentioned you're training at Moto Sandbox. You know, there's lots of good guys out there. Are you riding and training with the pro guys there, or do they have an amateur side too, or are you able to, you know, train with the good pros that are out there?
We do have an amateur side. We have two amazing trainers, Ryan Sipes and Jake. It's a little tougher during Supercross season to ride with the pro guys just because they are on such a different level than amateurs on Supercross. Obviously, they've had way more experience out there, and they're just on a completely different level. Mm-hmm. During motocross season, it's a little bit different just because, you know, you have 2 minutes and it's not nearly as gnarly as Supercross, obviously. Supercross is very technical.
Yeah.
You need to have razor sharp focus, and it's kind of hard to do that when you're getting blown by someone like Levi Kitchen.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. So, you know, I know Levi's there. And obviously, he just won this weekend in Seattle. Do you ever sit there and watch him and all the other guys ride Supercross? And knowing that, obviously, that's where you want to be one day, is do you look at that like, man, they make it look so easy, but it's really not?
100%. You know, we have Ken, we have Levi, and we have Chase. And they're, not only are they fun to watch, but they're also really easy to talk to, especially when you have questions. Like you said, with someone like myself eventually going to be riding Supercross, you're very curious on how to do certain things or how you should do certain things. And it's kind of good to pick their brains about it because each rider has a different idea on how to do something.
Yeah, and it's crazy. Watching them, they make it look so easy, almost like you're playing a video game. But then you get out there. I'm not sure how much Supercross you've ridden so far, but you probably get out there and you're just like, what? How are they doing that? How does it look so easy where you're out there just trying to survive?
Definitely, especially when it comes to the whoops. Whoops are just a different beast in themselves, and you kind of just have to go in it and just pray. Get on gas and pray, and hopefully you make it through it. And obviously for me, it's a little bit hard too because I'm shorter. So those types of questions are harder to ask someone like Levi, where he's tall and lanky.
Yeah,
but you know, they can still give you the basics.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you look at even Kenny and Chase. You know, they're, I don't think they're the tallest guys out there, but they are definitely lengthier. Same with like AP, and you see those guys that they just hammer the whoops, you know what I mean? And it must be the leverage they have with their size and, you know, their legs and things like that. It just probably what you, a short people probably wish we just had a few extra inches to be able to do what they can do.
Oh, 100%. Trust me. I say that to myself every day.
Yeah. No, that's cool. So, do you guys, so when you switched outdoors and you guys, you know, get to ride with those guys. Is it pretty cool? Because I'm sure, you know, you've been riding outdoors motocross tracks growing up your whole life, where when you get on Supercross, that's new for you. They've been doing it a lot longer. But when you get on outdoors, is it kind of cool to try and match their pace? You know, because again, you're riding the same track, you're probably more comfortable on those conditions. Is it cool to see where you stack up against those guys and, you know, see how far you're maybe off and but you still, it's cool to be able to measure yourself against them?
Absolutely. Definitely, you gain a lot more confidence, and it's a lot easier to do the things that they suggest. Obviously, like I said, Supercross is a completely different territory, where once you get into motocross, they, you know, they can come up to you and be like, hey, you need to pop over this bump into the turn.
Yeah.
Which, obviously, you're a lot more comfortable doing that because it's something that you already do.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're a B rider or even an A rider. So taking two laps, you know, let's just say you do get passed by Levi, like taking a couple, even just a couple turns behind him,
mm-hmm.
you can just pick up, hey, he gets off the brakes way sooner than I did. So you immediately try to change to that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Obviously, yeah. It's hard staying behind him, but
but also at the same time, you think about, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, you know, you guys at amateurs didn't really have that luxury of riding with these guys. So I feel like that's why the talent and then really our sport has been elevated, because, you know, you have like the Goat Farm and MTF, and now you have Sandbox and all these other places where you guys are able to ride with these guys. And so you could see, you know, obviously it's a practice day, but you could still gauge what the level is, where I can imagine when, you know, I mean, even Stewart, those guys, yeah, they were fast, but they weren't riding with, you know, some of the top pros. So when they come in, it's like, well, feed them to the wolves.
Right. And that's the hard thing. I feel like when you try to relate riders nowadays to a Ricky Carmichael, mm-hmm. It's so hard to do that just because the time was so different, right. You know, from they would ride 7 days a week, 6 hours a day, nonstop, where now you need to let your body recover. You need to, obviously they went to the gym.
Yeah, right.
They didn't spend nearly as much or focus on the gym nearly as much as we do now. And then like guys like Jet, obviously, mm-hmm. Pros ride 2 to 3 days during the week, probably.
Yeah.
Where, like I said, you know, back during Ricky's day, it was Monday to Friday, or Monday to Sunday, you know, with races on the weekend and whatnot.
Yeah, I was pretty wild. They're burning the candle at both ends for sure with all, you know, it's definitely evolved and people have gotten smarter with training and recovery. And, you know, maybe it's still a grind, but it's not as bad as it could have been like when those guys were doing it.
Right. And, you know, and you can help yourself get faster by taking the proper recovery and the proper off the bike training. Because that's the thing nowadays is off the bike training is just as important as on the bike training. It's not just 100% on the bike motos all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. And that's cool that, again, you kind of have that program to follow. All right, so are you going to the Sandbox a couple times a week, and how far away from there are you?
So I ride at Sandbox Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, or 3 days a week, Monday, Thursday, Friday. I live an hour away in Wekiwatchee, which is right on the river. So, and that kind of goes back to your being a kid question. When I'm done riding, I can let the whole motocross scene just kind of go.
Mm-hmm. Then
we can kayak and go out on the boat. We can swim in the river, just a whole different lifestyle once you get away from the motocross track.
Yeah, that's cool. And then you have places like, I know, Club MX, where you have the guys that actually live on site, to where I feel like, I mean, that's awesome that they have that. You know, they have a top-notch facility and program there, but I think I would like it more if I was able to, you know, leave at the end of the day just to kind of unwind and not have to think about it 24/7. But I see pros and cons to both sides for sure.
Right. I used to do that. I used to live at a training facility. I lived at a training facility for 4 years. And, like you said, it was so hard, even though you were done riding, it was so hard to get away with it. And it goes back to, again, I didn't have my license at the time, so I really had nowhere to go. It was ride, school, gym, and then listen to dirt bikes for the rest of the day because, you had teams testing or just, they had the afternoon group.
So let's talk a little bit about, you growing up and racing and kind of your, the way you've made it through the amateur ranks. I mean, you've been going to Loretta's for a long time. I think your first year was in 2012, and you've been steady at it, and obviously your results have improved. You've had some good rides there. Looking at last year, I think the results are skewed just a tad because you it seems like you had two motos that were good in each class, and then you had a moto in each class that was, maybe you had some issues, so it kind of skewed your overall results. But you've been going to Loretta's a long time. Was there a time or a year that you guys were racing and you're like, okay, now we're going to make a push for this, and this is what I want to do? Was there kind of a turning point when that was?
Yeah, I would probably say between my 85 and 125 year, my 85 year, I got second and third. So that was obviously a big confidence booster. Same thing with my 125 year. I got, I believe it was a third. I'm not too sure. But it's also been very eye-opening that I've been able to go there for 12 years and I only missed 1 year on 50s from broken femur. It's a different ball game. And I feel like especially Loretta's changes every year because there's always a different aspect that gets thrown into it. Obviously, last year we had that disgusting rainstorm, and that's probably what my fluctuation was because I know I belly flopped into a giant mud puddle on the start, which was not fun. But yeah, it's definitely Loretta's is another beast for sure.
It always seems like it'd be fun to go there, and you've been going a long time, like you said. But it never fails, right? You'll have a good day of weather, then the next day it's flooded, and the next day it's good. It's if you never seem to get out of there without some sort of mud conditions. I don't know if that. What are your thoughts on that? But are you happy about the mud conditions, or are you just like, dude, can we get a normal racetrack for all three motos?
So I would prefer a normal racetrack, but you got to go into those mud motos with the mindset that you're going to be fine and that you're just going to make it out and you're going to put in consistent laps and you're going to stay up off the ground. That's what I tell myself every single time I go into a mud moto. I just tell myself stay up off the ground because that's the biggest factor, honestly, because there's not going to be a guy who's just going to hold it wide open. And at least when you get into the faster classes, your 250Bs and your 250A classes, you're going to have guys that are sending it. But 9 times out of 10, those guys are going to end up on the ground because they come around and the track's not, especially in mud track, the track changes every lap, every turn. So, like I said, you just have to go into it with the mindset that you're going to be good, you're going to stay up off the ground, you're going to put clean laps in.
For sure, makes sense. When do you think you have you and have you had one? And if you have, when do you think your breakout moment or ride or year was that kind of put you on the map and maybe started to get noticed and getting some help and things like that?
I would say once I won a moto on the 125, people look at the little bikes obviously just because those are going to be your up and coming riders and the kids that are consistently out front are going to 50% become something. But once you get up to those bigger bikes, that's really when the spotlight's on you. You definitely have to make sure you're consistent. You definitely have to make sure that you're always there. that's kind of one thing that I've been focusing on a lot this year, is just making sure that I'm always there. I'm always in the fight. I'm always in that top three area.
Yeah, and it has to be. I mean, it's pretty crazy how the level that everybody's at, and you look at, because everybody's training, everybody's racing these races. You know, where back in the day, there wasn't as many of these facilities that everybody goes to. So it's pretty wild when you see these guys that come out of the amateurs and you know, they get in the pros and they start going the same speed, which is insane. But I also think it's changed too in the amateur side, where back in the day, and you might have it here and there still, but I mean, you had guys like Cincerillo, and I mean, even Jet Reynolds, and a couple of these kids that were signed, you know, from a very young age, to where you don't see a whole lot of that as much on the mini bikes. I mean, I'm sure it still happens, but most of the time it's, you know, you get on a big bike, and especially in the 250B class, that's when really the support starts. And those are some top coveted spots to, you know, to fight for.
Right. I think from a manufacturer standpoint, it's just so hard nowadays to, I guess, throw all your eggs in one basket. You know, it's a lot of pressure for a kid that's 10 years old that gets signed to a team. I know it's a lot of pressure. And I, you know, when I got signed to a team, I was 15, 16 years old.
Yeah.
And I felt pressure. I can't even imagine what it's like for like a kid that's 7, 8 years old. That's, you know, and maybe I could be wrong. Maybe they just look at it as riding their bikes. But at the end of the day, when they get fifth and they were supposed to get second, I can guarantee you that their parents aren't saying, "Oh, it's okay, you'll get it next time." You know, it's definitely, and I think that's where the pressure comes from. I don't necessarily think that it's just the team aspect, but, you know, I think it comes from a parent side as well.
Yeah, they look at, you know, they spent all this money, took time off work to go to Loretta's for, you know, 10 days, spent thousands of dollars, and little Johnny doesn't do too hot. So I could only imagine. I mean, obviously the kid wants to do good too, but the parents thinking, man, how much money I spent to get here. This is where we got to make it happen. It's just a high pressure situation to be in.
Right. And I think it's even harder when you have a kid that doesn't come from a racing side.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you have family that's been in racing, you know, especially, you know, like when your dad's an ex-pro,
right,
they go, you know, yeah, I can mm-hmm. see what happened, and I can see why, you know, why you ended up getting fifth instead of second.
Yeah.
I understand. But when you have these parents that, you know, just come from working, it's hard.
Yeah, definitely. So we talked a little bit earlier before we record. So you're on a Yamaha, you're riding for that Gizmo Mods Rock River Yamaha team. You were a part of the NSA Yamaha amateur team as well beforehand. How's it been with the switch? You know, obviously you're still on a Yamaha, but how has it been since you made that switch, and are you enjoying it?
Yeah, it's been really good. Like I said, I recently moved down to Sandbox, and I think that's a whole nother aspect to a team translation. Just because I'm in a newer environment, I'm surrounded by top pros. Obviously, I said Ryan Sipes and Jake are the trainer. Ryan's been through a lot, obviously.
Yeah.
Flat track, woods, supercross, motocross. I mean, he's done it all.
Dude's done it all.
he's done it all. And then Jake did outdoors as well. So it's been really good. It's one of those things where you just try to focus on yourself and you try to better yourself every day. And when you have a good day, it's a good day. And then when you have something that didn't go quite as planned, you know, you just go back, you look over it, and once you're done talking about it, you're done talking about it, and then you move on. So,
for sure. And are you doing your own bike maintenance, or does your dad help you out? Do you have a mechanic, or are you kind of doing both the riding and mechanic work?
I'm lucky enough that I still have my dad, and that's definitely another reason why I'm able to leave the stuff of the track, because it's not just, you don't just tell yourself that you're upset with your riding. You don't want other people to be upset with your riding if you don't have a day that went according to plan. So being able to talk about it with Ryan and Jake and my dad, and you know, when we come up for a game plan for the next day, you know, that's it. You're done. I go to the gym, I do my workout, you know, and everyone comes back, and you know, me and my dad, we have dinner with my mom, and you know, we don't talk about riding. That's it. It's done. It's over with. Then you move on to the next day.
Yeah, that's cool. And it's almost like, in, you know, as an adult, when you have a, you know, a full-time 9-to-5 job, and you, as soon as you walk out the door, at least for me, it's like, okay, that no longer exists for the evening, and I'm going to live my life, and yeah, it'll be there tomorrow. So it's kind of, it's nice to be able to cut that off, because I'm sure for you guys, it's pretty, it consumes your life, right? I mean, you're trying to get to that level. You have to put all this work in, all this writing, but at the same time, you also need to have a point where you can cut it off at night and kind of just forget about it until the next day.
Right. I mean, it can definitely alter a lot of things if you let it, you know, when, like I said, you just, you got to drop it and you got to move on, because, you know, if you don't, it's going to affect how you are once you get home. It's going to affect, you know, other people who are surrounded by you. If you're in a bad mood, they're going to be in a bad mood. It, you know, if you do other activities, you know, as dumb as it sounds, like I golf, if I let my riding affect my mind after I'm done, it's going to affect my golf. I mean, it sounds dumb.
I know.
It's so true. You know, you gotta, and it's hard. It takes a while to let that happen. But once you're done riding, you just gotta let it be done.
For sure. So as an amateur motocross rider who's obviously goes real fast and is, you know, getting to the top of the class, what is the most stressful thing or the hardest thing about being, you know, an amateur, you know, one of the top amateurs in the sport?
I think it's the ability to let outside distractions go, in a sense. It kind of goes back into the not letting your riding affect your mood. When you go out and ride and you race, you need to just focus on yourself. And when you get off the track, you need to be happy with how you rode, and you need to be happy with the amount of effort that you put in. You can't be on the track and, you know, have a crash and be in 13th coming through the pad and be thinking, oh, my team manager is going to be mad at me. My dad's going to be mad at me. And I honestly think, I think that's the downfall for a lot of people. I know I used to struggle with it. And I think it's the feeling of letting other people down. That's what gets you. Because like we said, I mean, your parents spend a lot of money getting to these races and traveling. And, you know, when you do get on a team, the roles just get transferred over to the team managers and the teams and the sponsors. Because obviously it's being paid for somehow. It doesn't, once you get on a team, it doesn't just disappear. So I think you just got to not let yourself down, because that's the only person that's going to be able to make the bike go faster. And, you know, the only person that's going to be able to hit their marks once you're on the track.
Yeah, it is interesting where, you know, if you have a fall, you're subconsciously, like, you know, rather than being worried about getting up and going, like you said, those other thoughts come through your mind where, I mean, you're in the middle of a race and you're thinking, oh crap, man, this person is going to be pissed, or they're going to be upset. It's funny that you immediately think of that rather than the race that you're in. Cause you know, you have all these people that are supporting you. And, we've talked about spending all the money to get there. It's funny how those thoughts creep into your mind in situations like that.
100%. Motocross is definitely a complete mental game. And you just gotta ignore it.
For sure. So what are your plans for 2024? I know, you know, we're I mean, I can't believe we're almost to April. What are your plans for this year, and what are you hoping to accomplish?
Consistency. Luckily, I did really good Daytona Spring Ding. I was able to get a championship at Spring Ding, which last year was unheard of because I had two broken wrists, broke my hand. So coming back and being able to win and get top threes, that was really something special. You don't take it for granted as much once you lose it. So definitely consistency, make it through regionals and go to Loretta's and just put in some solid motos, three solid motos.
Yeah. And are you taking, have you guys wanted to jump into any of the futures or the combines, or are you guys just, you know, focus on Loretta's?
Definitely will be attending the combines. Futures, haven't had that much time on Supercross, so I think we're going to leave that for next year. Because it's, like I said, it's a different animal, and you, once you're in Supercross, you got to be in it. Yeah. There's really no, oh, I'll ride Supercross one day, and I'll ride Motocross the other 3 days. It's got to be strictly Supercross, and that's got to be your number one priority.
Makes sense. So you'll focus on, you know, the Loretta side and then the combines were, and then maybe towards the end of the year when everybody starts, you know, getting that off season prep for Supercross, you can maybe make that transition to where you can just focus on that before the future starts next year.
100%.
And one thing I've been asking you guys is, now that we have the combines, we have the futures, obviously you have Loretta's and, you know, Freestone and all those amateur races that we've had in the past, does it feel like Loretta's still has that pressure and the feel of like you have to do good there? Or do you feel like since there's the combines and futures that maybe there isn't much weight on Loretta's because you could actually show what you can do on in futures on a real Supercross track and then in the combines on a real motocross track, where Loretta's, yeah, I mean, it's always been the biggest amateur race. But I mean, if you look at the track it is on, you know, you've been going there for a very long time. It's not really comparable to anything that they ride as a pro. So do you think it's cool they're adding these futures and combines? And do you think it's taking less pressure off Loretta's?
I wouldn't say it's taking less pressure off of Loretta's. I think, honestly, me personally, everyone has a different opinion. I would say I'm more worried about Loretta's than a combine. I think futures is a whole different ball game because there's really nothing like it.
Yeah.
Yes, you have Daytona, but that's not really.
Yeah.
I mean, we all saw the Daytona track this year. with the amount of rain that they got, I was really surprised that they were able to do anything with that. But I think futures is a different ball game. But towards the motocross side, I would say that Loretta still has that
prestige.
That's where you can show your wow factor, I guess, is the best way to put it. Just because those are, I mean, obviously you get the top kids in the combines, but it's Loretta's.
Yeah.
There are kids out there that have contracts today because of what they did at Loretta's. So I definitely think that, you know, that's still a star.
Yeah, and it has to be hard because, you know, Loretta's is one race a year, you know, and to think that, I mean, yes, it is, you know, you have to do good there to get noticed, but it's crazy that you have all year, and if you have a bad Loretta's, it almost, it's a make or break week for your year, which I think I like with them adding the combines and futures, and we'll see how, you know, how it morphs in the future. But I feel like if you guys had more of a series or something, that one race isn't the make or break. I don't know how you feel about that, but would you rather have more opportunities to show it, or do you like the pressure that Loretta's puts on you to have to perform for that 1 week?
I honestly would say I like the pressure just because it's, you know, it shows everyone that you're able to, you know, you're able to control it. I think I think once you get into, obviously, racing now, once you get old, it's a job. You can't really look at it as, oh, this is just something I do for fun. Yeah, you do it for fun, but once you get up to closer to pros, like it needs to either become your job or, you need to not go to Loretta's.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think the added pressure is good. And I think going to combines are also positive because you get that time frame down. When you go to a combine, you have your start procedures that you got to do at 10 minutes before your moto. And then you have your 15-minute time qualifying. So then you have your 2:30s. So I think they all kind of fall into their own category.
Yeah, makes sense. Couple more questions for you. One, first one is, you're 18 now. You're at the top of your class. You're a contender. If you could look back 10 years ago and give advice to an 8-year-old Logan Best that, things you've learned along the way, what's something that you would share with a younger Logan or a younger kid that's coming up? Just things that you've learned.
Oh, that's a good question. Probably to let the good days be good days and forget about the bad days. I feel like until this year, I really would beat myself up on days that I thought weren't as good as they should have been. And I think that probably just snowballed into bigger issues. It's so hard because I think parents influence a lot on their kids and they do add a lot of pressure. So when you're 8 years old, it's kind of hard to get that mental block, but that's definitely just be proud of yourself for what you've accomplished. I mean, especially when you're 8 years old and you make it to Loretta's, there's not a lot of 8-year-olds that make it there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I think we lose perspective sometimes, if you have a bad result or maybe the result at Loretta's isn't what you expected or whatever, but you got to think about not every person can even make it to Loretta's. So just getting there is a win in itself. I know it's not always, you don't always look at it that way. I'm sure, especially at your level where it's a given that you're going to be there where, when you're younger, take the wins and don't always focus on the negatives because just getting there is an accomplishment. So I think sometimes we just lose, sight of that.
Right. I mean, people always tell you you're only as good as your last race. So if you, say you do good at Daytona, you're going to be good for Daytona. But once you go to Freestone or you go to Spring Dang or even up to regionals and Loretta's, like you just got to reset.
Yep.
And you had a bad Daytona or a bad Freestone, go out and have a good area qualifier. I just got back from Birch Creek and I rode good. So yeah, I did good at Spring Ding, but it was better that I did good at the next race that I did.
Yeah, for sure. And so last one, where would you like to see yourself in 2 to 3 years if, everything goes to plan and where do you want to be?
I definitely want to be on a factory team and just enjoying racing. I mean, I really enjoy racing now, but I think doing it as an actual profession, I mean, you get to travel all over the place and you get to race. I was fortunate enough when I was 13 to go race for Team USA, for the FIM Junior World Cup. And I think, doing another one of those for an MX of Nations would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. And like the accumulation of all the work and things that you've done over the years, it when you finally get to that level and you make your pro debut, it's got to be. It'll probably be something that you're like, man, I'm here. I made it. Think about all those years that you've trained and put all that work in and to finally pay off. That's probably something you'll be looking forward to.
Yeah, it's gonna be rewarding 100%.
Well, cool. Well, I'm going to end this with some factory connection, this or that questions, or really it's a rapid fire. So I'll ask you two things and you pick, you know, what's your favorite out of the both. So I'll start with the first one. Chipotle or Chick-fil-A?
Chipotle, 100%. I will say that till the day I die.
I'm with you there. So, I mean, Chick-fil-A is good, but I don't think it's on the same level.
I don't think you get the health. It's not as healthy as Chipotle, though. I think that's mm-hmm. where it gets me.
Yeah, I don't know if my order at Chipotle is very healthy, but I don't have to worry about it. Coke or Pepsi? I know you're probably not drinking a lot of soda, but if you know, you had to drink one.
Probably Pepsi. Like you said, I don't really drink soda a lot. I think the closest thing to soda I get is a Fresca, which that's not even really soda. It's sparkling water, but if anything, I'd have to say Pepsi probably.
Pizza or tacos?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Depends on what kind of pizza. If you get like New York style pizza, then pizza goes a long way. But yeah, I'm gonna go with pizza actually.
Are you a morning person or a night person?
I'm a little bit of both. I can get around with both. Until like midnight, I start getting a little cranky. I get a little tired, but I guess we could just go with the morning person.
You ever have those late night game sessions where it makes the next morning hard?
Oh, 100%. Especially if you're on a winning streak. That's like once you're on a winning streak, you got to keep going.
Yeah, it's like gambling. I mean, you can't gamble yet, but it's like you never leave the table when you're on a heater. So you just got to keep it going.
Exactly.
And last one, would you rather travel back in time or travel to the future?
I think the future would be cool, but I also think the further we go into the future, the closer we are to getting rid of the sound of dirt bikes, because mm-hmm. it's going to be electric, a lot more electric racing.
Yeah, it's gonna be weird.
So I'm gonna take a bargain and go into the past.
Yeah, that actually is interesting that you mentioned that. So you know, with my age, we were the transition from two strokes to four strokes, and I can only imagine, let's say in 10 years from now, if you're going to have to make that transition from, you know, a combustion engine to electric. I hope it doesn't happen, because I can't imagine going to a supercross or an outdoor race listening to nothing. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be crazy. It's going to be interesting. I think I saw something about Justin Bogle racing a Stark.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch for sure.
Yeah. Hopefully it's just its own class and we can keep the sound of the bikes we have today.
Definitely.
Well, cool, man. Hey, I appreciate you taking the time to jump on here and, you know, get to know you more and kind of just give us your story. So, but before I let you go, I want to give you a chance to give a shout out to the people that make it happen for you.
Oh, well, thank you. Obviously, Rock River Gizmo Mods. I couldn't do it without them. They help make my bike go fast. The 6D for protecting my head, 100% goggles. FXR for making some of the best gear out there. Astro knee braces, Alpine Star boots. My off the bike trainer, Brady, for making sure I'm recovered, and Enzo suspension and Monster.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, like I said, it's been fun chatting with you, and good luck for the rest of 2024.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.